Well, good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchek with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a special meeting of the Commission. I will call this meeting to order. It is 1:36.
Who's that?
Oh, you're broadcasting. Oh, sorry. I got distracted by somebody who was listening online in the room. Okay. Are we okay, Daryl? Everything's good. Okay, we've called the meeting to order, and I do not have any opening comments.
Nor do I.
Oh, I do have one opening comment. Yes, I do. How dare I forget this?
How dare you forget it?
I know it. God, we have a special day among us. If I had a horn and something to bang on, we could do a whole, you know, like a restaurant and make everybody sing to Randy Chrisman, whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday, Randy. You don't look another year older to me. If it's any consolation.
Well, thank you.
In fact, I don't think you've aged in the last probably 10, 15 years.
I've had enough of these now that they're less meaningful than they used to be.
Well, we
sort of like putting another mile on the car once you've added a few years.
doesn't really matter much anymore. Well, we couldn't let the day pass without recognizing and acknowledging it. So I hope it's a lucky day. When I was a kid, I always felt like my birthday was lucky. I always kicked home runs and kickball and during recess when it was my birthday. So that's the extent of my opening comments. Do you have anything else?
Thank you. I'll just let it go with that.
Okay. So then the items on the agenda today are in Commissioner Kalk's portfolio, so I will pass it over to him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just also congratulate Randy on another trip around the sun. And thank both my colleagues and the staff. The MARC convention conference concluded yesterday. I don't think it could have really gone any better. So thank you all for helping out. And also for this special meeting today, I'll get it in my comments, but we've been waiting on some paperwork to get tied up, and that all is taken care of. And so I thought it was important to have the special meeting today because I'm sure that now that we've reached a decision that the company's eager to get working on these nice days. So I'll get right into it if that's all right. So item BK1, I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law and order, issuing certificate of site compatibility number 48 in Brady Wind LLC, Brady Wind Energy Center, Stark County, siting application case number PU15690.
Second.
Thank you. I'm going to go through this in some detail, but at the same time move along because I suspect there might be questions and you both might have comments. This is the hearing that was the longest Public Service Commission hearing in the state of North Dakota for wind farms. We had a 15-hour hearing. I can't say it was the longest hearing the commission has ever had because I don't recall back to statehood, but I know that it's certainly the longest that I've ever been involved in. The transmission lines, we had hearings for the Minn Kota power line. Some of those were over 12 hours, but I don't recall we hit this benchmark. And so the point I just say that is it was a very long and thorough hearing, and there's a lot of things we had to walk through. But to back up a little bit, in December of last year, Brady Wind filed with the North Dakota PSC an application for certificate of site compatibility for a wind energy conversion facility located in Stark County, North Dakota. In January of this year, the commission deemed the application complete, initiated a notice of filing, a notice of hearing for a public hearing to begin March 2nd at 11 a.m. Mountain Time at the Dickinson City Hall. On February 12th of 2016, the concerned citizens of Stark County filed a petition for intervention. Judge Tim Dawson granted the petition to intervene, and basically, you know, a little backstory here too, that the company that ultimately will hopefully build this wind farm, I did try to build a wind farm in right around the Taylor area, and there was some things that they had filed an application with us. The county itself did not approve that, so they withdrew their request from us and ultimately filed this case. So there's been a lot of discussion back and forth in Stark County about wind development, and the concerned citizens of Stark County certainly have the right that they exercise to intervene, so they intervened in the case. And what that did, I think, is set the stage for us, as we initially had the hearing slated for my notes here. For March 2nd, and when the application came for intervention and was approved, later on that the concern group filed a motion for continuance of the hearing for March 2nd. And I think that made good sense, that they Well, they asked to continue it to look at all the information to make sure they had full time to do it. And the commission, we granted that request and moved that the hearing be continued to March 30th. So there was a delay in the initial hearing date because the folks requested to intervene. And we didn't, as a commission, have to approve that. We could have just gone forward with the March 2nd hearing. But I think we did the right thing there by giving the additional time for the interveners to have to look through all the documentation. And I do think the flip side of it is, too, that folks know they're going to intervene. It's nice when they intervene in a timely manner. So that's where we did talk a lot, I think, in that discussion about people should not be able to use the intervening technique to delay the hearing process. And so we have certain things in statute on rate cases. Maybe it's in rules about when interventions have to be filed by. So that's one of the things I'd like to discuss as we get closer to legislative session, if we put some brackets around intervening, because I don't think someone should be requesting to intervene a day before the hearing and requesting putting us in a unique situation. So a little dialogue about that. But nevertheless, the group requested intervention. It was granted. We moved the hearing back to a later date. And so the hearing was held as planned. And going through just some more of the logistics of it, in May, after the hearing, we issued a notice of intent to consider information not presented at the hearing, which provided 10 days for parties to file a request to examine the information or evidence that was presented or present their own information, and no responses were received. And so that, to me, that was what the final hurdle that I was waiting for, to see what might be coming back from our intent to consider additional information. And the way that was evolved is during the hearing, we did our best in 15 hours to ask all the questions that we needed to do to make a decision. But when we got into our first or our second work session, I can't remember exactly what it was, I had a variety of questions that I had not contemplated in the hearing. I think Commissioner Christman had a couple, and I don't remember, Julie, if you did. I think it was probably just Randy and I. And when we asked those questions, the company came back with their answers, and it was not things that were in the hearing. So the make sure the record is tight to button it up legally. We did the notice to consider additional information. That period has concluded. But I think it's very important that as we go through these orders, to make sure we're following the process correctly. We're making sure it's tightened up very tight. If someone does appeal our order on whatever side it might be, that we've got a solid record with no glitches in it. And that's where, when I've seen folks that have success on getting things remanded back to commissions, if there's a mistake on process, not so much on our technical decision. So I think we've done a very nice job on this. I understand that there was some delay that perhaps that normally we wouldn't see, but that's the right thing to do in this case. But I will also say, too, that the better job we can do of having the questions at the hearing, the better job the company can do putting that information out there ahead of time, I think makes it a lot easier. And while this is on Brady 1, we have had the Brady 2 hearing, and the company certainly learned from our Brady 1 questions in the case that they presented in Brady 2. So now I'll get to the findings of fact. Brady Wind is a Delaware limited liability company. They're hoping to build this approximately 50 miles south of the city of Dickinson. The Brady Wind has reduced its original size to approximately 17,000 acres. The area was picked because of high wind resources, suitable transmission and interconnection, and it was the area that they were able to avoid a lot of environmental issues. The federal agencies and state agencies were contacted. There's a whole list of them, all the way from the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Corps of Engineers, from state, the State Aeronautics Commission, and basically the whole list of state agencies. Key to note that no objections to the project were raised by any state or federal agency or local government entities. So the company did their due diligence by asking all the right questions to these agencies. Nobody came back and rejected or objected to it. The Stark County Commission issued a conditional use permit for this project on December 22, 2015. And quite frankly, a lot of the discussion we heard at our hearing was about concerns and objections of what happened at the county hearing. But at the end of the day, the county exercised their right to issue a conditional use permit, and they did that. And so it's a factor in our order. The project itself has a nameplate capacity of 150 megawatts, will consist of up to 87 turbines. Right now it looks like they're using the GE 1.71 and the 1.79 model. They will have the SCADA system, which will, of course, control the operation of the wind farm. The towers are up to 262 feet high, with the foundation at the ground approximately 15 feet. They'll be having transformers at the base of the project. They'll make sure all the roads and collector system and operation of the tower are all contained inside the right area. There's an associated transmission line approximately 19 miles, which will actually be voted on later today. That'll be the line, if you will, to use this, get this power into the grid. The company expects it'll take approximately 6 months to construct it at a cost of approximately $250 million. The exclusion areas and avoidance areas, selection criteria, all those things that the company is complying with all of our criteria on it. I would just make note that Brady Wind has submitted its Class 3 cultural resources, and Brady Wind has maintained a concurrence letter from the SHPO for their cultural resource inventory. So that's good. The SHPO has concurred. There is one thing. There's some ARC issues that the SHPO is still working with the company, so they'll file those before they would ever get into the area of those constructions. But the cultural issues, they have SHPO concurrence, and they will continue to work with the SHPO on the ARC stuff and make sure they won't do any work in that area before that's taken care of. Getting more into the environmental things, they did all the appropriate resource, the avion surveys, everything appears to be in order. Neither the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or the North Dakota Game and Fish have raised any objections to the Brady Wind Farm. The company is working with all those agencies and will continue to work with them because, as we've seen in other wind farms, that, as Julie's pointed out, that the bald eagles don't have to get permits to come into the wind farm. So this is certainly an area where the Fish and Wildlife Service is aware of what's going on, as well as the Game and Fish, and the companies are working with them, and I think that's appropriate. As far as noise and shadow flicker, there will be no exceedance of 50 dBA within 100 feet of any occupied residence. Only two residences will have more than 30 hours of shadow flicker, and those two are both participating landowners that have signed waivers for that. And one of the discussions we had during the work sessions that I think will result in perhaps a rules block or us, that the 30 hours is a guideline that's been used throughout the country, quite honestly throughout the world. Perhaps we should consider putting that in some type of our rules. We have rules on noise. And I think the shadow flicker, while I do think 30 hours seems certainly appropriate, but I think it's appropriate to put the number that we are going to be using in our rules so companies have a feel for what the requirement's going to be. That's not just changing upon commissions and things that might also come into the hearings. This project, the rule of thumb had never been written down in particular, of 1,400 feet from an occupied residence. That's what I've always kind of used with the 1.1 megawatt turbines. But as turbines get bigger, I've changed that thought process a little bit in my mind. But Stark County has a setback of 2,000 feet from any currently occupied residence, and the company used the Stark County setback, which, quite honestly, is perhaps more restrictive than I would have used, but it's good. That's the county's right, and I fully support their ability to do that, and I applaud them for doing that. The company has also agreed to increase in the setbacks from non-participating boundaries up to 1,000 feet for all but three turbines. The county statute, I think, was 950 feet. Commissioner Crispin, in the discussion, he liked the idea of 1,000 feet, and the company made some minor adjustments to get all but three to that 1,000 feet from non-participating landowners. I think that was good. That was a nice change that I think Randy walked through, and I appreciate the company doing those things. This next one, it talks about FAA approval for the lighting. I'm going to save that lighting comment for Commissioner Fedorchuk. She's been the commissioner that's kind of taken the lead on the changes in the lighting systems for the turbines, so I'm going to, Julie, I'll let you talk about that.
Thank you.
But I will talk about during the discussion, you get a give and take of the public testimony comes in. There's some concerns about certain turbines. And during the hearing, basically I think I asked the question first about if the company would voluntarily remove turbines 82, 83, and 84 because there certainly seemed to be a lot of consternation from the public about those three turbines. And so, honestly, before the end of the hearing was done, the company voluntarily chose to remove those turbines from the grid. So I think that was a very good faith effort by the company. What was interesting is the dialogue that ensued around that. Of course, the people that were going to be what they felt most affected by those turbines, they were happy with the change. The landowner that owned those turbines is not happy with us removing those turbines. So, I mean, that's the constant, give and take balance that we continue to work through. But I think for me, it was one of those things that I think would have maybe been harder for me to get to a positive decision had they not voluntarily did that. But we didn't have to cross that bridge. They agreed to do it. Also, on one of our work sessions, there was we had a lot of discussion about Shadow Flicker, and the company identified turbine number 17 as one that, while it was in compliance with the guideline of 30 hours per year, it was affected in a lot of areas. They voluntarily chose to remove that one as well. So the company, I think, made another good faith effort there to minimize some of the concern of the non-participating landowners. As we get into the final conclusions, I believe the location, construction, operation of this wind farm will certainly meet the criteria set in North Dakota and benefit the state of North Dakota. I forgot to mention that Basin Electric ultimately will be receiving this power. They've signed a power purchase agreement with Brady One. And so one of the questions we had during the hearing was, what's the need for this? Who's going to benefit? And we've had the record shows that there is a need by Basin Electric, that they are going to benefit North Dakota customers of this. I thought that was very important. If there's modifications to the layout based on when they actually get in the ground, they'll certainly have to let us know and walk through the right criteria. So I think that kind of lays out me going through the order. I would just add a couple things is that, you know, as we go through the wind farm, we already have Brady 2 is already in front of us. We have Oliver 3 in front of us. There will be more wind development in North Dakota. And we saw that in this particular case, there was the group that intervened, which is their right, which means they can cross-examine witnesses, and they fully exercised that right. And I think it made for quite honestly, a better hearing, a better discussion. But I think the state needs to continue to let these wind energy rules and guidelines evolve. We look at how we built pipelines, you know, 100 years ago and 50 years ago. We build them different now. So now that we've got wind farms in production for over 10 years, I think we continue to have lessons learned about what we should be doing. But I think the sooner we get to some certainty that this is the noise requirements at a certain point, this is a shadow flicker requirement at a certain point, here's a line that we're going to use from non-participating or participating landowners, I think that's going to be better for the state. And one of the differences of wind farms is that each county has the right to set their own standards. And if their standards are more restrictive than the commission's, I think that that's easy to go where they're at. If they're not as restrictive as the commission's in the past, we've still put down what we think is appropriate. But I did talk to Mark Johnson here in the last couple of days, the head of the North Dakota Association of Counties, and several years ago, our number two attorney at that time and I went out and met with as many county commissioners as would like to about what we think counties should be looking at and make their decisions about what the county rules should be. Because as the development of power continues in North Dakota, I don't think it'd be out of the realm of possible that we have an additional 2,000 megawatts of wind in our state in the next 10 years. So it's not like where this two wind farms in front of us now are the last we're going to see. We're going to see more wind farms in North Dakota. So that the better we are at setting up the criteria of what is the process, I think that the better it would be for everyone. So I think that's I'd open up to my colleagues if they have any questions or comments to add into that, but I think that's a pretty detailed layout.
All right, we have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
Part of my comments will revolve around the lighting system, and Brian's right. That should really be your thing to talk about, so I'd be willing to defer to
it. Okay, I'll try to keep it brief. Well, this was a historic case in many regards. First of all, the length of the hearing, 15 hours. I think, again, the commission is proving that we don't just talk about wanting public input. We actually mean it, and we make good on our commitments to listen to all those folks who show up who want to have their thoughts heard. And so we've done that time and again, and we'll continue to do that. It's something that I believe strongly in, and I think my colleagues feel the same way. And in that process, you end up getting to a project that is better for the community and better for the people because you listen to what they're concerned about. In this case, there was a number of things. Each one of us brought something and focused on something that meant a lot to the people in this region. Commissioner Kalk pushed a lot on certain turbines in certain areas that were surrounding folks who showed up at the hearing and were very concerned about having these being surrounded by 8 turbines in their homestead when they weren't participating. That was mitigated. Commissioner Christman really listened and worked hard on increasing the setback for those, the property lines. This is something different that the commission really hasn't focused on before, but not just the setback from occupied residences, but the setback from property lines of non-participating landowners. That's something new and different, and something I think that's a positive change in our siting, recognizing that landowners ought to have the right to develop their land and put a house on any portion of their land, and there's a balance there, and I think that in this case we were able to strike a pretty good balance with the cooperation of the company and some reasonable distances that we achieved with a 1,000-foot setback nearly all of the non-participating landowners' property lines. And then another comment that was made over and over again by folks during the hearing was that they, with one of the impacts that they really dislike the most on wind projects is the red blinking lights at night. People live out in the country because they like the beauty of the landscape and the wide open spaces, and that's not just during the day, but quite honestly, some people appreciate the night sky more. And the red blinking lights were something that a lot of people, even proponents of wind, have some angst over, because they're forever. The red blinking doesn't stop really on the traditional lighting systems at ever. They're going for, you know, infinity. This new system that we worked through with a company in this case has those lights off most of the time. They only are triggered to turn on by a radar system that detects aircraft in the area, which is the reason for the red blinking lights in the beginning. So it triggers them to come on when they need to be on for the protection of the pilots in the sky. And the other times, they're off. And so really, the folks in this wind farm, this project, committed to having those lights installed as soon as possible after this project is commercially operational, but by December of 2018. So they gave a date certain where they intend to have those lights, that new lighting system, operational. And that will ensure that folks in this area, the night sky is lit by stars and not by red blinking lights from the wind generation facility. I think that's a real positive change and something that I think we will be working to include on all future new wind projects going forward, and when we can, retroactively on the existing systems, as we can have those conversations with the owners. So we worked really hard on this project. We listened, and I think we got to what our goal is, to produce a project that has minimal adverse effects, allows for the efficient use of resources, and ensures the reliability of the system, and ensures that energy needs are met in an orderly fashion. Those are our goals, and I think through the hard work of my colleagues and good public input, we were able to get there. So I'm happy to support this at this time.
Well, I think that change with the new lighting systems at night is going to be one of the landmark things about this case that will impact wind farm cases for the rest of time here. Because, you know, if you have something that needs to be 500 feet tall to work, it's pretty hard to imagine that you can put something up 500 feet and you're not going to see it all day long if you're close by. It's 500 feet in the air. But it doesn't necessarily mean with the new technology that people have to look at it all night either. And so with this, that will allow the night sky to be dark again, at least when there's not planes in the area. And I think that's a major improvement, and hats off to you, Commissioner Fedorchuk, for digging into that and finding that and questioning the company and earning that commitment. Maybe a less impactful thing, I do feel good about them committing to moving almost all their turbines to 1,000 or more feet away from property lines. There's a couple that are still within that, plus one alternate, but they're almost 1,000, and there were other obstacles, and at that late time, the expectation probably would not have been reasonable to force them to move those three as well, when it was such a small difference anyway. But I think it's kind of establishing a guideline that we not only need to take into consideration that distance from an occupied residence or structure, but also from people's property lines, as you two have highlighted. One other concern I have about this case that neither of you talked about had to do with what a lot of the negative testimony was that day. And to me, a lot of the negative testimony fell into what one would normally expect a county zoning board or county commission to deal with. You know, it was, the hunting's not going to be as good. This isn't a good spot. There's a lot of rural development out here. Go put it somewhere more rural. Go put it somewhere where there's more people because we like our rural skies. All kinds of things that, to me, really fall into either county zoning or county commission decisions. And I have been a little surprised during the hearing and then subsequently when perhaps there would have been opportunities for something late filed that these people had legal counsel and there was never really anything, any evidence presented of a lack of a fair hearing, which is what they were accusing the county of not providing. And, you know, it was just kind of third-hand testimony, nothing that you could that I could really use as evidence in a decision here to really wrap my arms around exact times or exact rooms and that the sizes weren't big enough or all the things they're accused of, but it was is very generalized. And I don't want our commission, I don't want to think that we become a super zoning board on the I would look at this differently with a long pipeline or transmission line or something, but with a wind farm like this that's in one county, or even if it was all one wind farm and it straddled two counties, it seems to me it should really be more of a local decision. But in the same way as I think courts have generally respected the decisions of this commission, as long as we had held good hearings and provided good evidence to back up our decisions. We never heard the county defend themselves because there was never really any real evidence presented of the poor hearings. But based on the real generalized statements, I'm not sure those people ever got a fair hearing at their county level. And I guess we'll probably never know. But I'm not sure what we do about that on going into the future if we rely on the counties to do this, but they're not doing their job. And again, I don't know that they did or didn't, but that was thrown out. Mm-hmm. That probably takes some consideration in the future. We need to make sure that if we rely on them, that they have the resources and wherewithal to do a good job of making those decisions. But again, they had legal counsel, and there was never anything presented that I could wrap my arms around here to deny this on those grounds. And as has been discussed, I think the company has made some positive moves to try to make this facility a little more acceptable to those people who had objections to it. And I find no reason to deny this.
Is there any further discussion?
I think that wraps it up. I was just thinking that's why I'm going to keep working with the Association of Counties to go back out and make sure they understand our role and their role, because I see our role as much different than the counties. I think the people sometimes it's hard to differentiate. And then to Julie's point about the lighting, it was December 31st, 2018 is what it says in the order. So we actually have that in there as a finding. So I appreciate your comments and ready to vote.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. Item BK2, I move the commission execute a contract for construction inspection services with K2 Engineering and Consultants, Inc. and Brady Wind, LLC, Brady Wind Energy Center, Stark County Siting Application, case number PU15690.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Usually we put these on consent, but if we're going to build it, we need to make sure we do the post-construction. So that's what this does. The contract has been properly bid out, and everything's in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Item BK3, I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law and order, issuing a corridor certificate number 188 and route permit number 200 in Brady Wind LLC 230 KV transmission line, Stark County siting application case number PU15797.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. The timeline for this case was very similar to the Brady Wind Farm itself. In late last year, they filed an application to build the transmission of line, to build the transmission line. I'm still tired from Mark, I think. In January of this year, the commission deemed the application complete, issued a notice of filing, a notice of hearing, for scheduling the hearing March 2nd, 2016 at 9 a.m. in Dickens City Hall. We also received a request for intervention by the concerned citizens of Stark County. Judge Dawson also approved that, and we also issued a notice to continue this hearing to the same time. So kind of the same exact time frame. One thing that I would say was much different is that while I think perhaps the 15 hours was the longest hearing we've had, I think the transmission line might have been the shortest hearing we had. It was a short transmission line. The company had secured all the easements in place, and there really wasn't a lot of issues at play. The background of it, it's 19 miles of 230 kV line, all within Stark County. They'll have a 30-acre switch yard. They'll interconnect to the Belfield Ram transmission line in the southwest corner of North Dakota. They'll be using, 126 steel monopole structures ranging in height from 70 to 130 feet. Average span is about 800 feet. They'll comply with all the appropriate electric safety requirements. As I laid out, they have the easements all in place for the entire route. The cost will be approximately $20 million. And once again, this power will be going to Basin Electric. And quite honestly, they also have the SHPO concurrence on this, and they did consult with all the appropriate agencies, federal and state, and they will work with North Dakota One Call System, and everything is certainly in order in this case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I don't really have any discussion on the details of the case for those folks that are listening that just might like to know. If you recall, I had a family issue come up. I had to leave the hearing, and so I was not at this hearing. But I must be becoming pretty predictable, because I will tell you, I listened to every word of the recordings, and they're very clear. There wasn't, really the first time that I went back and listened to significant amounts of our recordings. And Jay and his people, they do a great job. It was all perfectly clear. And apparently my questions are becoming predictable, because every time I thought I had a question, by the time the two of you were done, it had been asked and answered. And so I was left with no questions or not desiring any other information than what had been provided. And so I feel I'm as up to speed on this case as if I had been there. And so I intend to follow through with the vote and participate. Support the project.
Do you think we could have a 33% budget cut if we got rid of one commissioner?
I think that's what he's saying. We know what to ask his behalf.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And quite honestly, when we have these transmission lines, it's so much of a more efficient hearing when the company has secured all the easements in place, because in transmission lines, my experience has been if the easements are not in place, and condemnation and those things are potentially out there, that's where your big concerns come from. It was a relatively straightforward route, and they had all the easements, so it all worked out well. So thank you.
Just one additional comment. I get asked by folks in the public quite regularly why North Dakota has so much wind development, and especially compared to South Dakota. And because the wind resource isn't that different between North and South Dakota. But the first reason we have great wind development is our wind. And these projects are coming in at 50% or higher capacity rating, which is just exceptional. I think it's the best in the country. So that's the number one reason. But the second reason is the transmission system that exists in North Dakota, which has been reinforced and enhanced over the years to help facilitate more wind. But it started out to be a good, strong wind transmission system to begin with because of our coal facilities and the fact that we export a lot of power already. So this is further enhanced. And in this case, the project was located where the wind resource was good and they could get good access to the transmission lines without building a whole lot of additional transmission infrastructure. And we're seeing that more and more as a key component of the location of wind generation facilities.
Absolutely. Okay, anything else, Madam Chair? All righty. Item BK4. I move the Commission execute a contract for construction inspection services with K2 Engineers and Consultants, Inc. and Brady Wind LLC 230 KV Transmission Line, Stark County, Siting Application PU15797.
Second.
Thank you. And also in this case, now that the power line application has been approved, we certainly need to do the post-construction and the during-construction inspection, and that's what this contract lays out, and it has been properly bid and executed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my agenda. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Well, that concludes the total agenda for the special commission meeting, so then we will turn it over for questions.
Refresh me where Brady 2 is going to be built. That's Southern Stark and
Northern Headinger.
Northern Headinger, quick.
Okay. We had the hearing in New England on that June 7th.
And just to be, we don't know that it's going to be built yet.
Right, right.
Where it's proposed.
Right, but it's proposed. Is it? Seems like it's unusual that you had one wind farm, Brady 1, if we want to call it Brady 1, which was still pending. They proposed Brady 2, and you had a hearing before you made a decision on Brady 1. It just seems very, just odd.
Say that question again, Dave.
You know, you had a Brady 1 hearing.
Right.
Hadn't made a decision yet. They came in with Brady 2. You had the Brady 2 hearing before making the decision here.
Correct.
So it just seemed a little strange. Have you run into that before?
I think, well, if you take it to Oliver 3, I mean, we have they're different organizations, if you will, even though they are different sites. But I guess that I would look at it as, I guess I don't think it's odd because they had two different projects in place. If it had been called something different, because actually next area is behind Oliver 3 too. So I think what is interesting, though, and maybe in a positive way, that the lessons that the companies learned from Brady 1, they were able to apply in the Brady 2 hearing. But I mean, I don't know that I'm understanding your question exactly, Dave. I think it's...
It was just a curiosity that you had.
I think you're seeing that as the drive for these companies to meet the deadline for the production tax credit, which is the end of this year. They have to have a certain provable amount of construction or investment by the end of this year in order to qualify for the production tax credits moving forward. And so they are under the gun to meet those deadlines and North Dakota's limited construction season. And so I think that's why the company was, you know, moving forward sort of in tandem on those two projects. They're separate projects, and they're named 1 and 2, but I don't... You know, 2 could have been cited first, perhaps, and then 1, and just because they separated them for whatever reason, just to make it maybe more manageable to break up the regulatory process and the easements and get all the pieces in place to be able to, you know, get some of it moving forward.
I think, thanks to Julie's point, I think I understand your question better. I think had there not been a late intervention request and had there not been a additional information be considered, I think that our Brady 1 decision would have been a month earlier. So if you look at it, I think when the company filed their applications, they layered them. And so we were looking at, you know, one hearing here and another hearing a month later. I think with those two built-in, quote-unquote, delays, I think that's why they appeared to drop in almost the same time. So I think that probably is why it happened. Because quite honestly, we've got a work session next Tuesday on Brady 2, and not prejudging anything, but as I look at that work session and the issues there, there's not nearly the issues. There was no intervention. The hearing was much more straightforward. So I think the delay for a decision in Brady 2 would be a lot different than the time frame it was here.
And in terms of the lights, the new lighting systems, is that substantial cost compared to the current red light, red blinking lights?
From the company, it's an increased cost, but it... All I can say is it wasn't substantial enough for them to say we can't do it. And so you'd have to get more details from them on the cost. My understanding is it's pretty basic in terms of my understanding of the system, but it's a different light than what is on them today. So as long as they can put this different version of the light on from the beginning, that makes it pretty reasonable cost-wise, and then it's the purchase of the radar and you have to have them located, you know, at several different places. But that's really what it is. It's a radar that can communicate with the lights. It can detect the aircraft. And then when the aircraft are within a certain distance, the lights, it triggers the lights to come on. And then when it's in the, out of the radar location, then they go off.
And is this something that you'll... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think what you're asking is, when they seen the cost, did it make them blink?
Oh, yes.
Baby's learning from you.
Yep. That was clever. That was like birthday like humor.
That's good. So this is going to be, you're going to write this in the rules that these kind of lights are going to be required?
Well, the rules is one thing. We'll probably add this to our list of things that we're looking at for the rules. And meanwhile, it's something we're bringing up at the hearings and getting a commitment from the projects on a case-by-case basis. I don't know about putting specific technology into the rules. I mean, we have to think about that because the technology will evolve, and then every time it changes, maybe something even better comes along, and then you have to change the rules again. So we'll have to look at that and think about what makes the most sense.
Knowing that this is achievable, well, first of all, and Julie touched on it, but just to make sure that it was emphasized enough, to go back and redo an existing one would be more costly because they have to replace the lights too, as well as add the radar. But I do think that's something I'm excited about looking at and finding out just what the costs will be and redoing our current landscape as well. Going forward, knowing that this is available and that this is the way these lights are when you're building new, I'd have a pretty hard time, I think, imagining myself supporting another wind farm siting that didn't adopt this technology.
Yeah,
me too.
I was going to ask, with regard to the lights and the radar technology, is that on any existing wind farm in North Dakota, or is this going to be the first? This will be the first one.
First,
okay.
It's one of the first in the country. There, it has been tested, and it's on one in Arizona or some place in the Southwest with NextEra, and the FAA has approved it. And so it's been, you know, tested to be safe. It just they have to approve of the actual final plan and make sure that it works here in North Dakota. But this is the first here. And it's pretty new. I would say I talked to the AWEA, that's the National Wind Organization Industry Group. They were here for Mark. And the Steve Gow, what's his position there? And Susan, they didn't know that much about this lighting system.
Yeah, Susan's one of the VPs, and he's just one of their consultants.
Yeah, so even from the, you know, the wind industry is sort of just getting their feet under them on this technology and getting wind of it.
Yeah, I think that it's very promising, the technology, but I just am a little bit, just make sure we don't get too far ahead of the FAA in some of this stuff, too. We had one of the panels on UAVs and line of sight, and there's a lot of stuff that flies out there. But anyway, I like the humor.
So that's a very good point. The FAA has approved this technology, but they do have to approve the plan for this technology here on this particular site. So they file a plan for their lighting system that gets approved separate from the review of the system as a whole, which they've already received. So they have to get that lighting system plan approved and make sure that it works. So hopefully we aren't, you know, getting out ahead too much that there'd be some glitch in the system and can't work here. But from what we've seen and from what the company has researched and committed to, I think that we can be reasonably confident that it's going to be included and operational within the next couple of years.
So you think getting it approved is going to be a breeze?
We are so funny.
Yes.
Anything else? Any other questions? All right. Well, that concludes our special meeting. Thanks, everyone. We are adjourned.